We're back with the Danger Room's 24 Days of Christmas. This year, we're doing one episode per affiliation, each with its own special guest. We made an effort this year to bring in some guests from all over the world. Sit back, listen, and Merry Christmas. Hello, and welcome to another Christmas episode of the Danger Room. This time with me, I have Huggy Bear from Sweden. Introduce yourself and say hi to listeners.
Hello. As you said, I'm Huggy Bear. My real name is Hugo, from the south of Sweden, actually. We have a sort of spread out meta in this very long stretched country. So yeah, playing Shield a lot since they came out. And I also ran them at the WTC that we fortunately managed to win.
Yes. Yeah. Huggy was on the winning team. It's funny. I've gone back and I've played a bunch of the affiliations in your guys' team. And I'm like, yeah, your guys' lists are just perfect in hindsight. So I'm not surprised. And then I lost to Torbjorn in the cuts too.
Yeah, he's a person that really grinds tens of games probably per week. And so
yeah, Torbjorn's great. But yeah, so we're having you on doing Shield. Speaking of WTC, Shield had just gotten nerfed, I would say, before WTC, and you didn't have access to the second core box. I was going to play Shield, and I chickened out of it. Why'd you stick with it?
I agree wholeheartedly that Shield was definitely one of the big losers from the core box nerf. Not the core box nerf, the update, the Winter Soldier nerf. He was proved to be more integral than one might have expected. My gut reaction was to try to fit in some sort of a splash to cover the weaknesses. No one was playing Sam Avengers in our team, for instance, so I was looking into that. But then in the end, I started to find some interesting options with Hela, for instance, and I figured that I've been playing Shield for so long now that it's better to just stick with the stuff you know. It's probably going to reward me more than trying to learn something new in, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever time we had. So I just decided to do some minimalistic changes to the roster. I even kept Bucky One in there, although I regretted that in hindsight. But yeah, now there are other options.
Yeah, I think I probably should have stuck with something I was more familiar with for WTC, but people can listen to that in the WTC episode we did. Yeah, so we could run down your list if you want to just read it off first.
For sure. So this is where I'm at the moment. I'm tinkering a lot with different characters and various stuff. So this is like a frozen point in time, more than me saying this is what I think is the best Shield roster at the moment. And there are one thing that the new core box has made, as well as the update, is that I think that it has opened up Shield to be played in multiple ways. And so this is my way, and there are other ways, of course. But I'm running Nick Fury Jr., Invincible Iron Man, Nick Fury Sr. and the Howling Commandos, Agent Venom, OG Black Widow from the old core box, Spider-Woman, Crimson Dynamo, Hela Spider-Man Miles Morales, and Crossbones Merciless Merc. You want the tactics cards right away, or?
Yeah, we can keep going.
All right, then we have Eye in the Sky, Battlefield Medicine, Sacrifice, Sitrep, Eyes on the Prize, Brace for Impact, Stark Armory, Fallback, Shieldmobile, and Mark for Death. And crisis-wise, we got Gamma, Fisk Witnesses, Mutant Madman for Secures, and for Extracts, we have Research Station, Hammers, and Senators.
So I've got a ton of questions, but we could start with Nick Fury is here, even with the new Iron Man. You have two leaders now. I think Nick Fury is pretty self-explanatory, right?
Yeah.
Eye in the Sky kind of defines the faction, and
Absolutely. And the thing is that Eye in the Sky works even when Invincible Iron Man is the leader and Nick Fury is just in the team. He only has to be in a S.H.I.E.L.D. team for that card to recycle every round. So you can have great use out of it, even if you play Invincible Iron Man as your leader. But I still think that Nick Fury is played in like 70 to 80% of all games, at least. That might change because I have played Invincible Iron Man a bit now, and I am liking what I'm seeing. So I might actually be playing him more than I expected, especially on low crisis threat levels.
So you're talking about Invincible Iron Man leadership on low threats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so my question would have been like, when do you, like, have you played with new Iron Man leadership, and when would you opt for that over Nyx?
Well, basically, as a general principle, I want to play Iron Man's leadership when I expect to take a points lead early. Like, if I see an opportunity to go and get ahead on points, then Nick Fury's leadership becomes somewhat lackluster. Then it's only aggressive, which can be great against, for instance, some control teams that want, like Wakanda, that wants you to push you off points with attacks. But so then I think for protecting an extract advantage, the defensive rerolls from Tony's leadership is pretty great. And then you could also play it when there's like hard, because what S.H.I.E.L.D. wants to do when you play Nick Fury is to have trade a slight VP disadvantage for better positioning and better attrition. So if you're playing an extreme crisis setup, something like, let's say, Fisk Witnesses and Researcher, there's 3 points on that map, and each point is worth 2 VPs. So there's a big chance that a lot of points will go to either player. Like, you will, you could have a 6-0 or a 4-2 situation. And in that situation, it's a bit risky to like try to game the VP scoring and try to like, because then you're always falling behind at least 2 points. So then in that situation, I find it better to just try and play a normal scoring game and have rerolls from Iron Man than trying to like be smart about the extracts with Nick Fury. But those are just like the situations that I've been discovering so far. There are probably more. And then I'm also, at least currently, always playing Iron Man's leadership when I'm seeing Cosmic Ghost Rider on the other side of the table, because I think Fury is really bad in that matchup.
Yeah, I find, I mean, I guess bad in what way?
Well, mainly because Cosmic Ghost Rider in Guardians is going to define that matchup. I have seen S.H.I.E.L.D. players be wrecked basically by playing against only Cosmic Ghost Riders, Ghost Rider, and then the rest of the Guardians team basically just cheerleaded. So you can't really play the normal style. You have to adapt. And, well, for starters, just to be clear, I absolutely think Cosmic Ghost Rider is a model that needs to be nerfed, but instead of just whining about it, until AMG does it, I'm going to look upon beating him as an intellectual challenge and try to find as good ways as possible for doing that. Cosmic Ghost Rider's kit basically takes away everything that is good about Eye in the Sky. His place messes with it. His Chains of Sidorak messes with it. The range on his gun messes with it. So it's really hard to get anything out of Eye in the Sky in that game. Unless you stack it with something like a Scarlet Witch with No More Mutants, or an Ebony Maw with Shush, or stack it with other defensive tech that starts to warp your roster in a more significant way. Then both Nick Fury and his agents have range 3, which is a range that you really don't want to... It's in a gunfight against the Guardians, where there's a Star-Lord with range 4, a Rocket with range 5, and a Cosmic Ghost Rider with range 4, that's a real disadvantage. Plus, he basically has to expose himself quite heavily in order to make attacks. So what ends up happening is basically he sits back, possibly gets to do one eye in the sky, and then Cosmic Ghost Rider is just running circles around him for the whole game. So that way, I think Invincible Iron Man puts the shield player in a much better spot, because those defensive rerolls can cause you to randomly survive an attack, which can, even that could be enough to put CGR on the back foot, because he, in order to get value out of his 6 points, he really needs to take out two characters per round or one big character. And as soon as he's not doing that, you start to get opportunities here and there, because you have enough activations left to take out the rest of his characters. So I find Invincible Iron Man better positioned there. He has better range, he offers rerolls, he's tankier. So yeah, and he also has his Jarvis bubble to allow for some key rerolls on other characters' attacks.
Yeah, when CGR is going to be taking out something that you have, you need your attacks to be as consistent as possible, which Jarvis should allow for.
And my strategy is not that I have tested this too many times, but my strategy is basically to just never attack Cosmic Ghost Rider, except with Spider-Woman. And then it's for the sole purpose of putting stun on him. Stun him, and then don't touch him, because then the chances increase that he's going to lose his psychosis token, and then he's much easier to deal with. And just try to ignore him as much as possible, because he's not contributing to scoring most of the time, at least. And if you... so you have to, like, threaten him for a bit so he can't afford to go late in the round and just rearrange the board with his multiple Keys of Sidorak. But don't put attacks into him that just feed him power, because then he can actually just do all the things he wants to do, and then that's gonna go south pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's kind of seems to be the general sentiment about fighting Ghost Rider, is just ignore him and pray that you can survive in some way and hope you're able to remove his allies.
Yeah, find cover and exploit rerolls.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense, too, because Guardians are going to be playing centralized stuff, and that's where Iron Man, like, shines. I like new Iron Man a lot. I've been testing him around in X-Men. Just the reroll bubble's great, and his durability is also great.
He's also, in general, if you're playing against an affiliation that doesn't want to attack you, like Kingpin Criminals, for instance, or some instances of Web Warriors, then Tony is also better than Fury, I think, because... the good thing about Fury's leadership is the bonus VPs, and you're not getting those unless your opponent is dazing your characters.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have randomly found the aggressive part of Nick Fury's leadership to be useful into even Web Warriors. It kind of stunts the impact webbings and the webline kick throws and stuff like that, so you can get back on the objectives.
Sure. It's especially great, but... the best use out of it I have found is on a round where you have gotten a character dazed, and so you've gotten your bonus VP, which has put you on equal scoring as your opponent, and then they've forgotten that your leadership has switched. So they're taken by surprise when you suddenly aggressive back onto a point or something.
Yeah, I've had a lot of games where I'm like, they kill my model, I get my VP, and then they attack me again. I'm like, all right, I'm going to aggressive here. And they're like, wait, what's happening? And I'm like, here, this is my leadership. They're like, oh, okay. Yeah, is there anything else that we missed about the shield leaders?
I mean, there's still a lot to be discovered about Invincible Iron Man. So this is tentative, but the staple is still Nick Fury. And it's a leadership that I think there aren't that too many people playing shield overall. And I think it's a leadership with a high skill threshold. But the fun part of it is that you get to feel really smart when you score those extra VPs and take your opponent by surprise by letting them have the lead for like rounds 1, 2, going into round 3, and then you swing back and win by 1 point round 4, and they just wonder, what just happened? I thought I was winning.
That is one thing I do love about playing Shield, is it offers the player their ability, or it offers them a way to feel smart when they play the game. You can do really clever things. Like I've had you know, beams go into somebody and like Nick, and then you like eye in the sky them out of the beam template, and their opponent's like, it's almost always a judge call for me. So those are fun. So I guess moving on, we have Holland Commandos are here. They're probably just the best three threat for Shield now.
Yeah, I've actually discovered that. At first, I thought, oh, they are the best, for sure the best three under Fury. But under Iron Man, I'm not so sure because their power recycling isn't really that good. And by power recycling, I mean that they get power refunded when they do damage. So basically, the rerolls become free if they do damage with them. That doesn't happen since they only have a flat gainer. But rerolls on Got Your Backs can be stupid. So, as it turns out, they're great with Iron Man as well.
Also, Iron Man has no action economy if you ignore his little punch spender, and they can move him around if he needs to get double shots off on something.
Sure.
So that's cool. But yeah, how are you finding... So I guess I should... Yeah, we don't have Winter Soldiers not here. How are you finding just one instance of Got Your Back versus like the double?
The double ones were surely great. I guess I just let it go. But, I mean, I still see, funnily enough, you can still play the combination of Howling Commandos and Bucky One pretty well in Cabal under the new Red Skull. So he's adopted that combination because Red Skull 3's leadership makes it so that the Bucky One's attacks can still have significant value. What I find the biggest part of the nerf to Bucky, because on paper, if you look percentage-wise, I think it's like, instead of having something 4 out of 5 rapid fires, you got to have like 1 or 1 out of 3 or something. But the unreliability of that means that he's both a bad first activation of a round and a bad last activation. Because as a first activation, you want a character that can do explosive damage and daze a character quite as reliably as possible. Because Shield is a lot about taking away activations from your opponent because you don't really care about priority, thanks to Eye in the Sky. And as a last activation, you also want to heavily impact the board because that's when you put the last hand to it. So best way to handle Bucky there is with a Red Fury, and that also got severely nerfed with its size restriction, as well as probably only getting one free shot with the gun there as well. So that means that he's like one of these middle activations that can chip damage. And I mean, sure, he can still do good work, but it felt like I had to gamble all the time when I played him, and I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, when I played Shield a lot, I felt like if Bucky got nerfed at all, I felt like my offense would have just been not good. He was kind of like, him being as strong as he was put me just over the threshold of being able to do the attrition that I needed.
Yeah, and he wasn't even, funnily enough, he wasn't even considered like top two. Three costs in Shield, because that was Howling Commandos and OG Iron Man. So he was like third. But as soon as he got nerfed, everyone discovered that, actually he was kind of important here.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously couldn't exist in his previous state with, we'll get to it here shortly, but, you know, Stark Armory.
Yeah, he was overtuned, for sure. He was a splashed everywhere, and so I completely agreed with the nerf, for sure. But nevertheless, it made Shield a loser, one of the losers of the update. And you can see that if you look at the Longshanks, winning rate has gone down significantly since the update for Shield.
Yeah, Shield was the top win percentage faction for a minute there. And then, yeah, they've dropped. All right, next up we have Agent Venom. I love Agent Venom so much. He's such a great role player in every faction that he's a part of.
He does it all. Range, action economy, incinerate on a stick, fantastic spender, displace. There's nothing not to love. Slightly on the squishier end, perhaps, but he makes up the best. I usually say the best defensive tech in the game is distance to your opponent. So have so ranged attacks are better than one might think. But he's mainly a specialist here. He comes in when I want another really mobile character, or when I'm playing against Web Warriors, which is one of the top factions at the moment. So it's nice to have an answer to them, because he ignores their rerolls.
Yeah, he does a little more than that for people unfamiliar. Agent Venom is kind of just the Swiss Army knife of everything Web Warriors hate. Ignores their rerolls. He removes all their conditions for basically nothing. So he just like can't be staggered, can't be slowed. Has a teleport to get around Spider Tracker. It's really rough for them.
And he's good. And he's a good generalist as well. Only time you don't want to play him is when your opponent has a ton of energy attacks.
Right. Yeah, he's not so great into Guardians. I mean, you do have Mutant Madman in this list. Do you bring him on that? He's pretty good there, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I think mainly Hela and Spider-Woman. But he can come in there for sure. For sure.
That makes sense. We'll get to them in a second. So we'll keep going through the ones that are probably normal. So we got Two-Threat Widow. I love Two-Threat Widow. I think she's a little underappreciated. She's obviously affiliated here.
A lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. players like to go with Bullseye over her, and I can really see an argument for that. But since I like to build my Beam team, that we might get to later, I need her to round out affiliation. And also, she's just great at running around and standing on points, and you usually need at least one character to do that. And if that character is a two-threat that is also very unappealing to put attacks into, it's pretty great. I mean, I played a game on stream the other night against Norbert where we played Fisk Witnesses, and he had Hulk on his one flank, and I just put Black Widow one forward right opposite Hulk, and basically said, yeah, you want to come waste some attacks with Hulk?
Yeah, Hulk does not like dealing with Widow. It's just extremely inefficient for him.
Martial artist can be a pain there. And I was also running Iron Man's leadership, so rerolls on martial artist defense is nasty.
I love it. Yeah, Widow 1's great. Okay, so next up, or I guess we could go to Crimson Dynamo. He's also pretty commonly taken here in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I think he is he's taken a little bit of a hit given how the meta has developed, because the top dogs now contain a lot of range 4 attacks and above, which means that they can avoid his disruption field. And also the general sort of killing power and damage output levels have like increased over time. So he's not always as tanky as you might remember him, but he's still awesome. Shock is fantastic to put out everywhere, and he's a staple in the like Beam team that I like to play on Researcher and Gamma and Fisk mainly.
Okay, sweet. We'll get to that in a second. Next up, we have Spider-Woman. Pretty divisive piece, especially in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep. She was, when we made our rosters for the WTC, she was like the comfort price. Is that how you say it? Comfort price? Because I had to give up Agent Venom to our Guardians player. And I...
Oh, so you're trying to say like a discount.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't really like her at all.
Or consolation.
Consolation price. That's it. So I didn't really like her at all in S.H.I.E.L.D. because I thought that her playstyle does not match S.H.I.E.L.D.'s playstyle. But after I got, so to speak, forced to play her for a while, I've really come around. She's great. She's a specialist, but I really like her on Senators, for instance, where you can, and basically on any extract where you want to overextend one character. Because I feel quite comfortable in sending her forward, grabbing one of the opponent's senators, and then if they start attacking her, as soon as she's taken 3 damage, I shield mobile her back. So she's great for, she's a great grab and run piece that way. I think the error of thought I did in the beginning was that I considered her a chase piece, that wasn't supposed to pick up an extract early and then run and chase people with her spender that makes them drop extracts. But in doing so, she sometimes gets trouble with power generation. So instead, I've found it much better to just play her as a luxury version of Black Widow. Basically, pick up an extract with her early, which makes the opponent have to come to you. And when they do, she can bite.
Right. And she can gain power from taking attacks, of course, where her builders are not the most consistent thing, in my experience.
Yeah, and she's another one of those really unattractive targets. Often you have to spend at least one move action to get within her stealth. And you have to, and if you get too close, if you want to stand on the same point as her, you're going to be within two to give her martial artist. So she can really be a nuisance there. And then interrogate can win games.
You can also do clever things like eye in the sky her into martial artist range, I'd imagine.
Yep. Or aggressive into martial artist range if you're on an experienced leadership and on an even score.
Sure, yeah. If you're going to get attacked twice, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of cool tricks you can do. Yeah, that's cool. I like Spider-Woman. I think you're right. The chase aspect of her is probably pretty inconsistent. And if you're going to play like no matter the cost, she can leave herself pretty vulnerable and taking too much damage.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of people do that for a while. I tried it myself. I didn't really like it because it basically means you have to spend two tactics card for it. First, no matter the cost, and then battlefield medicine to make up for the damage. Because when she's got an extract, you want her to be safe. And when she's taken three damage, she's not safe.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think you want to be putting damage on her like that, especially not one. And then also shield cards are so good. That's like, I have to put in this card in my five now too. So
yeah, totally agree.
Okay, so now we've got some interesting splash stuff here. Let's start with Hela. I absolutely love Hela. I've been playing her a bunch in X-Men. She is the pay-to-flip queen, in my opinion. Yeah, I think she might be the best pay-to-flip model in the game. That is maybe a little hot take. I need more games, but she's been impressive.
I'm not gonna say you're wrong. She is great, and Death's Embrace is huge. Because that makes her able to go from one side on Madman to the other side in one activation and flip a point. Possibly even do a couple of damage to a character that she advances short towards. But yeah, there are multiple sides to her. Her extra power generation is great because it allows, and medium base allows her to be a eyes on the prize target. And I have one of my favorite setups with her is on Infinity Hammers. Where she, if I have, or even if I don't have Pryo, I start her on one flank, grab the hammer, retreat to the point, and then first activation next round is just she double moves to the other side of the table, maybe even triple moves with Death's Embrace. And now we have a situation where there are three hammers on one side of the table, one hammer on the other side of the table, and the opponent still has to keep characters on the side with one hammer if he doesn't want to give up the points. So basically now we have a situation where I can play my entire team against half of his team. And the shield leadership from Nick Fury makes up for the fact that I am discarding one or two VPs because of that move.
Yeah, I've felt that map. Infinity Formulas definitely plays like, can I get extract advantage on one side of the table and collapse everything there? If you can accomplish that, it feels really strong.
Yep. So that's the setup you want to be looking for with Hela. And then she has great damage output with her soul mechanic. Since you have grunts, you get a ton of souls over the course of a game. And then her defensive tech on her injured side, where she, if she has three souls and gets KO'd, she can spend three souls and is not KO'd. That combos really nicely with Eye in the Sky, depending on the positioning of stuff, of course. But she can basically be immortal for one activation if you've placed her right and have Brace online as well if your opponent has a throw.
Yeah, I've felt like she's pretty hard to kill, and I was like, man, if I had Eye in the Sky here, she'd be not dying. There's no way. What else about Hela? She also just rolls really big dice pool attacks. A lot of the time in my experience, usually like 6 to 9 dice attacks. And like, if you back that up with Iron Man rerolls or Stark Armory, it probably just is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And she she doesn't use power that much. She never uses more than 4 power in one activation, basically. Death's Embrace and then 2 Claim Souls. So, and since she generates 2 power per round in the power phase, then she's going to build up a pile of power pretty fast, especially when she starts spending souls to do big spenders. So she will likely have power to spare so that she can make good use of Tony's rerolls. And she can really dial her output to 11. A real common pattern of attacks is first do 1 claim soul and then do 1 builder strike with as many souls as you feel comfortable with, which could take that to an... So that would equal a 6 dice mystic followed by an 8 dice physical with automatic bleed, possibly with rerolls on top. So that's pretty great. And then Death's Embrace, if you want to finish something off or move strategically to be within range of other targets because you don't have to attack the model that you're targeting with Death's Embrace. So you can use it in a bunch of ways, really.
Yeah, the Death's Embrace also heals her for the damage she deals with it. So you can also... I find that she usually heals like a point or two damage per activation.
Yep, that too. One thing you need to remember, though, is that she doesn't have Death's Embrace on her injured side, which is a shame.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they took it off for card space, but man, would it be good.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe healing together with the soul mechanic might have been a little bit too good, maybe.
It's probably just too much, because she feels really great as is. So, you know, that would just be a buff. Okay, next up we got Miles. Why is Miles here?
He has recently replaced Hawkeye. And Hawkeye is a great character. I really like Hawkeye, especially under Tony, because he really recycles power well. However, what I don't like about Hawkeye is that he dies to a stiff breeze. So that sort of dictates incredibly hard where he is comfortable standing on the board. And it even makes him quite unattractive to play at all at more midline-oriented crises. So Miles, I think, has a similar play pattern with his web swing and web line kick rather than hook, arrow, shoot, retreat, the Hawkeye playstyle. He also has a throw on his builder, which is great, especially when there's rerolls in the mix. And he also has a spider sense, which makes him more tanky. I've always liked the play pattern with Eye in the Sky that you take the first attack on the shin from your opponent. And if you, as long as they don't one-shot you, you can use Eye in the Sky on the second attack to get out. And that is much more likely to happen if you have some sort of defensive tech like invulnerability or spider sense or something. So that's in light of that. And then he has a steal, which means that I can play a double steal in my roster with Spider-Woman and Miles Morales, which I really like to do sometimes. Hammers, for instance, and generally extracts where there are 3 or 4 extract objectives on the table. That increases the value of steals because the sort of the percentage of points that swings with every steal is higher than on, for instance, Spider-Infected or Cubes or even Senders.
Yeah, people are definitely coming around to playing Miles more as a splash. Black Cat was probably just too strong previously, which kept him out of that role. But now people are playing him all over the place. So,
yeah, for sure.
You also have a lot of stealth models here, and he contributes to that, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is also a defensive tech that gets him in the mix. I mean, then that means you could even use Eye in the Sky on the first attack targeting him, move him into cover and outside of stealth, because that means the second attack still gets canceled due to stealth, but you also get a better odds of surviving the first attack.
Yeah, for anyone not familiar with that interaction, if you Eye in the Sky Miles out of stealth range, he still is getting attacked. The second attack would not be in range because of stealth. Also, if you got shot by a rapid fire,
the targeting step has already happened, so stealth doesn't help.
But if it was a rapid fire attack, you would be out of range for the second shot, the rapid fire shot.
That is correct.
And then the last one here, to everyone's surprise, we got Merciless Merc Crossbones.
Yeah, my favorite.
All right, sell everyone on Crossbones. I think he's cool.
So the way I got into Crossbones is, well, he's the moral replacement for Winter Soldier 1. When I realized that Bucky needs to go, I started to look at War Machine and thought that, well, he combos pretty well with Crimson Dynamo, so you can set up some really good double beam teams on narrow secures, and you can stack that with rerolls and Stark Armory pretty well. But then I started to look at Crossbones Merciless Merc, and I came to the conclusion that for the most part, he's just a better War Machine because, well, he has a short move rather than a medium move, but I think he makes up for that by having Hit and Run, which is a real big factor, I'd say here. Then his beam is energy rather than physical. And as we all know, energy is the attack type where the average defense values in the game are the lowest. So energy is the best attack type. Plus, his random Wild Skull Pierce is nothing to be sneezed at, actually. Because if you have rerolls, either by playing Tony's leadership or by him being within four, so you can use Jarvis. If you roll a wild on the general attack roll, then it's basically like you count skulls on the reroll, because either you get another hit or you get a skull and remove a block, so the net result is the same. It's just a nice thing to have. It's one of those small little extra pieces of an extra cherry on top. And then I like his spender way more than War Machine's, especially since it has an automatic displace built into it. 4 power for 8 dice and a throw is pretty good value, I think. And then aggressive built in, and also having 6 stamina on his healthy side rather than 5 is a much bigger thing than you might think for Stark, because it's all about surviving that one spike that is inevitably going to happen, and every point of stamina is worth a lot, which is the same argument that I put forward with Miles versus Hawkeye, whereas Hawkeye has 4 and Miles has 5 stamina on his healthy side. So yeah, that's my case for him, and I have really enjoyed putting him together with Dynamo on Gamma mainly, but also other narrow crises, pushing them forward quite aggressively first round. If I have Pryo, I try to place Tony within one of them so that he can play Stark Armory immediately round 2, and I can have 6 dice beams across significant parts of the opponent's team. Or I just hold on to Stark Armory until a turn where he's gonna have dazed a couple of my characters and given me Pryo, so that I can, because I think that it's a card that kind of needs to be played either with Pryo or with multiple threats being projected towards your opponent so that he can't remove them all or disarm them by moving out of the way and such, since it has to be played in the power phase. So yeah, it's basically exploiting Stark Armory by having a bunch of beams so that you get a ton of bonus dice.
Yeah, I love it. Also, Crossbones has damage reduction, which is also shared with War Machine, but I think it smooths out his 2 defenses and Energy Mystic by a lot.
Yeah, and for every extra stamina, the value increases exponentially. So that's why 6 stamina on his healthy side is a big deal. It's like comparing, Luke Cage is the same, and he's considered way tankier than both Iron Man and War Machine.
Yeah, I mean, Crossbones has almost the same stat line as Luke Cage. He just has one less energy and mystic defense.
Yeah, slightly worse defenses, but you can't have it all.
No. Crossbones, in my experience, he makes a lot of attacks. Like, the hit and run it doesn't read well on paper, but if you put him on the table, he's more mobile than you would expect.
He's highly likely to get to do at least 3 attacks per activation. So worst case, 1 attack for the first action, then hit and run, and then place himself so that he gets to beam at least 2 enemy characters. It's not unreasonable. It's not going to work all the time, but often enough.
Yeah, I think he definitely deserves some more talk from the community, but it'll take some time. Okay, tactics cards. So we have Eye in the Sky. I don't know if there needs much explanation here.
No, it's a staple. Don't leave home without it.
And then we've got Battlefield Medicine, which is a shield med pack. When you bring in this card?
When I have room. I mean, it's a really good card. And oftentimes, I mean, there are a bunch of cards here that have specific purposes, like Sit Rep, for instance, for getting Crimson or Crossbones up early, or Shield Mobile for protecting an overextended character. So, and Battle Med is like a card that it's never bad. It doesn't have a specific purpose. It's just always good. So when I feel that I don't need too many specialized cards, I just slap it in there. It's great, especially with tanky characters, because defensive tech makes every health point. It increases the value of every health point.
Yeah, I always used to love playing this card on Dynamo. And then even new Iron Man has damage reduction, so he makes great use out of it as well. And he can play it himself. All right, and then our restricted cards, we have Sacrifice, which I think is a shield staple at this point, being able to redirect attacks so you can make this Gordian knot, as people like to say, is very strong.
Sacrificing into a character that gets dazed and gives you a VP, or protecting a character that first sacrifices and then eyes away if you want to protect particular characters. Yeah, it's great. It saves, it wins games.
And then we have Brace, also just probably the no-brainer piece. You don't have, there's a good amount of squishy models here, and the list also doesn't really have terrain throws, so your opponent's probably going to be throwing it at you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there is a discussion to be had about advanced R&D, because there are a bunch of characters here that can make good use out of it. Miles, Agent Venom, Howling Commandos all love to start with 2 power in order to get the pain train rolling as fast as possible. And also, mainly, if you're playing against a big bad Royal Tall list, for instance, with Nick Fury, and he's not going to offer you to generate a power by doing attacks round 1, and you really want to have Eye in the Sky online, top of 2, then you might have to take R&D in order to guarantee having Eye in the Sky online round 2. But I, even given that I'm currently with Brace, but I have gone in and out in between Brace and R&D. So yeah, you can make case for either, I think.
Yeah, and then it's like an Immortal Hulk can just like sit in the back, not give you shots, and then he can just spend leap, bump, one below all, and just be in the middle of your team from anywhere. And if you don't have Brace, you know, you're just going to be, you can Eye in the Sky something, but you're probably just going to eat a bunch of throws anyway. So
for sure. And what you don't, generally what you don't like as a shield player is characters that kill multiple of your characters in a single activation. One is okay, 2 is not.
Yeah, getting your models thrown into each other is really, really bad. And then we have Eyes on the Prize. This typically didn't used to get run with shield, but now with the addition of Hela and the Iron Man leadership, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, it's a specialist card again. I mean, it's not something that, I mean, I could play it with Hela in order to surprise an opponent. It just, but mainly you want to play the slow game, like not caring about the 1 VP lead for your opponent, trade that for better positioning and attrition, and then just at the right time, either take extract from him by violence or by steals. So it's an option that I can use, but it's not going to come into play a ton of games, actually.
Okay. And then the other generically good cards like Fallback. This is pretty much in everyone's list, I think.
Yeah, it's great when you run Invincible Iron Man's leadership on low points and don't have Eye in the Sky because you can't fit Fury as well.
Okay, that makes sense. And then Mark for Death. This is probably just the anti-Web Warrior card.
Yep, it is.
Yep, yeah, you have a lot of guns. They have a lot of stealth. It works out.
And then Stark Armory, of course, which is, well, as close you can get to a staple card at the moment.
Yeah, so we could talk about Stark Armory. I mean, I've heard Pat Dunford has told me in person that he thinks it could be restricted at some point. Vince Kirkov has also told me the same thing. So how do you feel about it?
Sure, I could definitely agree. I do think it's a little bit overrated on wider crises because it is difficult to get enough attacks within the bubble to make it really more impactful than some other cards. I mean, you could go with the good old Helios Laser, for instance, and there are other options now. Joint effort can be occasionally pretty interesting. And yeah, there are multiple damage increasing cards in the game. But on narrow crisis, it's stupid.
Yeah, it's insanely good. I've been playing it with Cyclops and obviously Invincible, and it's been really great. Okay, and then we've got Sit Rep, which Sit Rep is really great. I used to love it when Deception was unrestricted and everyone had Deception. You could just use it to move a model up with you to not get moved.
Yeah, it's a real finesse card. I like to use it on Skrulls, for instance. If you have Prio on Skrulls, you deploy Fury and his agents centrally. So the agents take the home Skrull in one move and retreat. Then Nick Fury spends one power to Sit Rep Black Widow that stands on one flank. And when she moves forward, she's going to be moves forward short. He's going to be able to reach both the opponent's Skrull and a side Skrull in one move to be able to grab it and then retreat. So you're going to have a 2-2 situation with only safe characters, which is quite tough on that particular crisis.
That seems really great. Yeah, that's awesome.
And you can do something similar on Paranoia Pummel's Populace. You can send the agents, Fury's agents, forward to grab one Paranoia token. Sacrificing the agents for extracts round one is not something you particularly want to do, but sometimes you have to because it's a very fast scoring extract and you can't have that the opponent runs away with it. So agents grab one, Fury Sit Reps a long mover or a medium mover with a medium base positioned in between two Paranoia tokens on the other flank, so that if the opponent grabs one of them, then I'm just going to grab the other and retreat and we're going to have 2-2. And then we start playing the attrition game.
Yep. Yeah, it's very versatile. I bring it quite a lot when I play Shield. And then we talked a little bit about Shield Mobile. I know you were talking about Shield Mobile at WTC, especially with Spider-Woman. Is this just like a Senator's card? Or?
Yeah, my favorite game. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And my favorite game on the WTC was against Spain, where I did exactly that. Sent her forward when there was like one Senator left to grab on the opponent's side. I just double moved her forward and grabbed it. So he didn't have that many activations left to go to do damage to her. So she managed to, well, she did take 5 damage from a size 4 being thrown into her, but still survived. And then I had priority and just, I think, made an attack, stunned someone, Shield Mobile, and moved back in behind a size 5 terrain piece. And then she just basically stuck around there for a huge part of the game. So I got a 4-2 lead early there and then just had to defend it. And given how Shield usually plays, where they don't chase points early, and then all of a sudden you do, it can put an opponent on the back foot.
Yeah, I actually was messing around with some Senator stuff before I switched off Shield, and I thought there was something there. I was obviously playing Deception at the time when it was unrestricted. I thought Agent Venom was really great on Senators, and I also was like, yeah, I have to play Shield Mobile, but I wasn't playing Spider-Woman, but that makes sense.
It's also nice. You could use it against, if you're playing against Web Warriors or Criminals, perhaps, on Hammers or Paranoia or some other midline-oriented extract. Send up Fury and the agents to grab one extract each. So if they kill the agents, they're going to throw the extract backwards to my lines. If they start doing attacks into Fury, they better one-shot him or he's going to Shield Mobile the hell out of there.
Yep. I used to do that as well, especially into Web Warriors. It was really, really great. And usually they're like, oh, crap. And then you can collapse the table and then they have to rotate and like stand on points and leave stuff behind. It's a pretty good board state for you.
Yeah. X-Men is also pretty good to do that against.
So we have Gamma, Mare Fisk, and Madman. Gamma is definitely in most Shield lists. I guess my question would be, why Gamma and not Demons? I feel like the lower threat's more rough.
I agree with you, and I would love to have Demons, but as the meta is right now, Guardians are simply too good on demons. And so I'm not comfortable in giving them that. Their two best characters, CGR and Vill, are immune to incinerate. So that means that if I'm forced to play on demons against him, that means that he's not going to have to spend power on CGR to incinerate my characters. And keeping his power on the low end is key to keeping him honest, I think. So that's basically it. That's why it's Gamma and Fisk rather than Gamma and Demons. So that might change if CGR changes in the future. But at the moment, I don't want to play Demons because of that.
Okay, so you said Gamma and Fisk instead of Gamma and Demons. So Gamma would be here regardless of CGR.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard taking... I mean, I guess you could take... Fisk is great against CGR because he can get randomly stunned when one of the points are scored, and he really doesn't like that. Mutant Madman is good because you can flip points and then retreat, so he has a harder time attacking you and you're still scoring. The third option would be Scoundrels, where you have cover on everything, so you're more likely to survive one of his attacks. But Scoundrels in general is not great for shield, and particularly not great with this setup, I think. So, and most of the time I just like to exploit the narrow formations, with Gamma and Fisk being the prominent ones there. Madman, given the fact that it's a pay to flip where you can leave the points and still score them, it can help getting better use out of a character like, well, range 3 characters in general, because on Infinity you have to remain on the point, and that means that a range 3 doesn't reach from one secure point to another one. But if you can leave the point, then you can actually keep making attacks even though you're still controlling the point.
So that's the logic as to why like Mutant Madman is here, not Infinity Formula.
Yeah, I'd say so. And also Hela and Spider-Woman are great there, so...
So Fisk is mostly here as a CGR tech.
Not only. It's still a narrow crisis where... And I can build a really sweet team with either Fury or Invincible Iron Man, depending on what I want. Usually the Invincible Iron Man, I think, because of the potential to have real one-sided scoring. So Invincible Iron Man, Howling Commandos, Black Widow, Crimson Dynamo, and Crossbones is my favorite 16 points team at the moment. And that is perfect to play at Fisk because almost all of your characters generate one power at a time, so they're not really bothered by stun. And you also have a ton of beams.
Yeah, and you have you have 3 models with damage reduction, right?
Exactly. And even 2 displaces with Crossbones, Suspender, and Iron Man's Push.
Yeah, I like it. Normally, I would have been skeptical of Mayor Fisk. I feel like running to the middle is not something S.H.I.E.L.D. wants to be doing, especially in like standing there. But the VPs are really quick if you get all of it.
Yeah, but you can afford to like only score one of the points round one, or even tying one of them and let your opponent score the other, and then move that witness point that your opponent scored to a more strategic position where you can get more use out of your beams.
I do think Crossbones opens that up for you quite nicely, whereas old Bucky would not have been able to do that.
Oh, for sure. He was way squishier. And also, Black Widow 1 is perfectly comfortable by moving up and standing on a point there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. She's kind of frustrating to put resources in as the opponent. And then I do have one last thing. Gamma and Fisk, I feel like, are really hard to play into Hulk. I think regular Hulk, you can probably shoot him down. Iron Man can definitely move him. But I do feel like Immortal Hulk is a shield problem and these crises help him. So like, what's your plan for Immortal Hulk?
To be honest, I haven't really felt him to be such a big problem when I played against him. I feel that Eye in the Sky makes really good work against him, and Incinerate on a Stick from the Howling Commandos can make him go down pretty fast. Just decide that, okay, now I'm only putting attacks into Immortal Hulk, and then that's what we're doing.
Okay, fair enough. And then we I guess we could start with Hammers. Hammers is pretty normal shield stuff. Lack of Bucky makes Hammers a little worse, but you could easily put it on Iron Man, and he's probably fine with that.
Hammers is fantastic on beams.
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah, Hammers is just a normal shield scenario. It's great. Hela, like you said, can do the grab and refuse flank. So
yeah, and sometimes I can even afford allowing the opponent to grab three hammers if he has tech for that, and if he's forcing me to put myself in a bad position if I go for one hammer. Like if he has deception or a well-placed Logan or something like that. So allowing him to take 3-1, compensate for that by scoring an extra secure point and then do some steals later on is also a viable strategy.
The other normal shield extract here is Researcher. It's pretty normal because the grunts can contest it. The low threat is a bit awkward, but you're usually playing it without threat.
Yeah. Although I'm more keen to play Invincible Iron Man here. I actually really like the setup of Invincible Iron Man, Howling Commandos, Black Widow, and Miles and Crossbones on 15, because that is a quite tanky team. And actually, 3 out of the 5 models have a displace, and the 4th model, namely Howling Commandos, has a somewhat control element to them in that they're moving other characters back onto points. So it's deceptively controlly while still being a damage team.
Yeah. Also, the thing with Researcher is you're usually playing it without priority, so you can pick the higher threat if you wish that your opponent puts down, assuming like no gamma.
That's exactly it. As high points as possible, but if forced into lower points, I think that Invincible Iron Man actually offers some interesting options in combination with new Crossbones and the other characters.
And then we talked a little bit about Senators. I think the third shield extract has been mostly preference, I would say. I know Vince likes cubes, at least he did. I've seen people play Legacy Virus, and then obviously Senators here.
Montesi.
Yep, that too.
I think there are multiple extracts that shield can like. For a while I was actually considering Spiders, Cubes, and Montesi formula, because those are three extracts where I can always get a safe 1 VP disadvantage without exposing any models, and that is a place where Fury likes to be. So yeah, that's also a route you can go down.
Yeah, I've always really loved Montesi with that. I'm like, yeah, you can just take it. Like, it will just go 2-2.
and both Cubes and Spider Infected are extracts that are disadvantageous to be holding. With Spider Infected, you get randomly moved. With Cubes, you take damage. So if you can, like, thrive in a situation where your opponent has holding more extracts than you, thus getting more disadvantages than you due to the extract, then you can profit from that in the long run. Like, your opponent running around with 3 Spider Infected can give you a sort of pseudo action economy by moving them into your threat ranges, bunching them up for beams and stuff like that.
Very cool. Is there anything that we missed?
Oh, there are tons of stuff to talk about, and there are, of course, multiple options that you can do to switch out characters. Actually, if I'm going to talk a little bit about potential changes to the character lineup, I'd say Hela is the most under discussion character currently, because I am debating with myself whether she should just be Bearable.
Yep, I kind of came to the same conclusion probably a day ago after playing Hela like in about 5 or 6 games.
I'm not sure yet, but that there's a discussion to be had. I'm also thinking if there might be a place for a 5-point character here, possibly the new Captain Marvel, but that might be going too deep into countering CGR land. Bill is probably a good middle way there.
Yeah, it's hard to really list build and take into consideration what Guardians does right now. There's not many answers, and it's just they're kind of known, I think.
At the end of the day, you still have to play well. You can't win in turn 0 in this game. You can get an advantage of 5-10% perhaps a chance of winning, but given the fact that this is a game about small margins, then that can do all the difference.
I guess I was trying to say that I have been ignoring CGR's existence in my list building. It allows me to find, I felt like I've found new things that are interesting.
It's not unlikely that we will see a nerf before the next big event, perhaps. I mean, last year they released Malekith during the summer, basically the same time as CGR. He was nerfed in December, I think. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. I'm like, there's so much animosity towards this character, and Malekith was nerfed in December. I just don't see CGR existing as he is to LVO.
But I mean, even though he is a nuisance, we've been through worse, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe like the Enchantress All You've Got stuff was worse. I'm not convinced Malekith is worse.
Yeah, the Dash Guard and the Hired Muscle and the unnerfed Malekith. Yeah, I still think. But yeah, he is a problem for sure. I don't think there are many people that don't agree with that at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think Bill and the leadership and Star-Lord's leadership are factors in CGR. It's not just him. We played a Guardians list for WTC that didn't have Bill in it. Like, we were practicing one, and it felt much, much worse, even with CGR. Like, some kind of, like, CGR Star-Lord and whatever else.
Yeah, the Guardians leadership is might need a look over as well, but it's much harder to come up with reasonable changes there, I think. I don't envy the developers there. But I do think that they have deserved the benefit of the doubt over the course of time. I'm sure they're going to take care of the problematic stuff sooner or later.
Yeah, I feel that way. Okay, I think that wraps us up. But before we finish, a couple questions. Who's your most wanted MCP character that's not in the game yet?
Agent Coulson, 100%.
Yes. Yeah, they put Maria Hill on the shield grunts. Like, she's kind of in the front, so like maybe that's where she will be. But yeah, Coulson is not represented yet. I mean, what threat value do you see Coulson at? Surely he's like 3 threat, right?
Yeah, probably. Actually, I also wanted the zombie version of Agent Sitwell as a 2 threat with some fun rules. Yeah. But yeah, Coulson for sure.
Yeah, I think Coulson and Quake would be my wants for shield. And then Sploosh always asks, are you heroes or are you villains?
Heroes. I've always been a good guys fanboy. I'm just, yeah.
Sploosh likes to ask this question because he feels like he's alone in the villains camp and he wants to know for sure.
Yeah, not going to help you there, Sploosh.
Okay, Hugo, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. Also, before we sign off, you could tell the listeners about your TTS streams that you do.
Oh, for sure. Me and Norbert, the good doctor, usually stream games during the TTS leagues. So we'll for sure be doing some more of those when the season 13 comes around in the new year. So keep your eyes open for those. They do stream on Dr. Norbert's Twitch, and then they get put up on YouTube under Dr. Norbert's Games. And we are always in for good analysis, good banter, and good drinks.
Yes. Yeah, no, the Norbert and Huggy Bear stream is great. It's like a week. You guys do it once per week, typically, right?
Typically. I mean, sometimes life gets in the way, but that's the ambition.
Yep. Yeah, no. Norbert usually just fills in with somebody if somebody's out or whatever. So
exactly. When there's a TTS season going, then we do some occasional extra content in between seasons. But our main show is like connected to the TTS seasons.
Right on. All right, Hugo. Thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. And also, congratulations on your WTC win.
Thanks. Will be a tough one to defend next year.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone can do it.
No. We'll see. We'll have to try.
Okay, listeners, thank you and see you next time.